this time, I'd like to introduce our speaker, Andy.
Yeah. I'm Andy. I'm an alcoholic. I'm very nervous. I want to thank everyone for coming out for supporting me. My friend Jenny and Jeff coming from Fresno. Very touched that you're actually you said you were coming, but I'm really shocked that you are really here. So I'm really now really nervous. I'm not very, I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is 12/11/09. I celebrated 13 years last Sunday. I'm going to be up here telling you what it was like, what has happened, and what it is like now. I came here on a court card. I did not want to get sober. That was not, that, I had fun. You know, I was one of those drinkers that went out and had a good time. The problem is that I drank and I liked to drive. And that kind of got me into a lot of trouble. And thankfully, though, because of all that trouble and because of everything I've been through, I have the best life I've ever could have. I would never have had this life if I would have continued to drink. I didn't know that now. I didn't know that then, but I know it now, looking back. It's given me gifts that are unmanageable, and I can't, without this program, there's no way I can stay sober. And I will, I'll talk about it. I've gone through spurts of, you know, thinking I've got this. And it catches up to you, the feelings, the wanting to drink, it all comes back. And I'm scared to go back out, and I don't want that. Because I know if I go back out, I don't know if I'll come back in. So I'll tell you a little bit about what it was like. I did take notes. Last time I spoke, I didn't have notes, and I think I talked a little bit too much on this part, so I have some notes to kind of keep me focused. So I come from a loving family. My family likes to live, though, behind a white picket fence. So it's beautiful on the outside, you know, but there's some dysfunction on the inside. You wouldn't know it unless you live or around it a lot. You can hear it. I have my parents are together. They've been together. They worked hard to support us. I have a brother and a sister. There's alcoholics from the family that will not say they're alcoholics, but they're alive and kicking. And then I have alcoholics like my uncle. He has 35 years of sobriety. His two daughters are in the program. They're proud to say they're in the program, but I'm in the program and my mom doesn't want to admit it to anybody. It's an embarrassment on them. You know, what did they do wrong? But I'm proud of it. So, when I was about 10 is when I probably had my first drink. I come from a family, we're Basque, we're Italian, and my best friend's Italian, and between both families, we were able to drink, as long as we drank at home, right? And then go anywhere. We didn't drink a lot when we were 10, but I remember the first taste. It was bourbon and 7, and I liked it. I loved it. My dad would give me a sip. I would, you know, get them their beers. I would have a sip of beer. And I liked the taste of alcohol. I didn't feel like an effect or anything. I just liked the taste. When I became 14, around 14, that's when we would drink. I would be able to drink really at family gatherings. Either at my house or my friend's house, didn't matter. When we were 16, when we drank, you know, the one thing my parents did teach me was never to drink and drive. They didn't care if we drank as long as we stayed home. And if I drank, there was always, if you drank, wait 2 to 3 hours before you drive. And that worked until it didn't work. And then I, you know, would drink, wait a couple hours, then take off, go out, and they would think I'm at the movies or somewhere safe, and that's not where I was. Or I was at the movies, but we had liquor. And so, my parents really stressed the safety of safe drinking. In elementary school, I'm going to go back to elementary school, you know, I was this talkable, playful little girl, you know, daddy's little girl. I was the good one in the family. My brother's actually probably the sixth in the family, but I was next to good in the family. My sister was the wild one. You know, she was the one that was getting into all the trouble. You know, she got, she ran away from home. She got suspended, almost expelled for drinking and drugs at school. And I was the good one, you know. I could do no wrong. I would get not the best grades, and that was okay for my, you know, my parents. I went to a small Catholic school, so there was one class per grade level, and I was comfortable there. I didn't have to go to a middle school because it was K-8, so I was comfortable. I had 25 people I knew, and when it was time to go to high school, I was supposed to go to Clovis West. And going from a one grade, you know, one class, one grade class to a school with, I mean, thousands of kids, it was overwhelming for me. I didn't want to do that. I had fear that set in. I wasn't going to be good enough because people weren't going to like me. And so I begged my parents to send me to Memorial, which was another Catholic school. It was expensive. And so they made it happen. I know my mom got another, she worked, she was an accountant, but she also worked, she picked up some other night jobs of, you know, doing small businesses. My sister was getting in trouble at the time, so they decided to pull her from Clovis West and bring her to Memorial too, so now it's both of us at Memorial. She straightened up right away. When I went to Memorial, I still had this fear, or I felt like I was getting judged by everybody. I've always had this trust issue with females, but females are always talking about me. I don't know where that came from, but it's something that I've always felt, and it was really heavy in high school. So then my best friend really wanted to go out with this guy. He had the lower custom truck, and she really liked this guy, and I'm competitive. And it was probably wrong of me to do this to my best friend, but I was like, I'm going to get him. And I got him. Lucky me. He ended up being an abusive, very abusive 13-year relationship. It started out fun. We had, you know, a good couple years. I always was able to go into the liquor stores and get liquor. I tell them my age. I always looked older than everybody, and it was a good thing that then, but not a good thing now. They would always sell to me, and so I felt popular, or the cool one, because I was able to get everyone to liquor. And we went from, I really didn't drink except for at the family thing, which wasn't a lot of drinking for me, but when I hooked up with him, we went from drinking 6 packs to 18 packs to 24 packs to 32 packs to now we're old enough to go to a bar, and now we're just getting just drunk. My best friend, who's Italian, her entire family owns every Italian restaurant in Fresno. And all the bars, we were able to stay till, 6 in the morning. You know, we would stay all night drinking. And so my drinking got kind of out of control. At this time, my boyfriend got really abusive, emotionally, physically, and I'd like to say, or I would say that for years, it hasn't been till recent, that I used to blame him for why I'm an alcoholic. But he is not the reason I'm an alcoholic. I'm the reason I'm an alcoholic. I like drinking, and I have this phenomenon of a craving, and when I take a drink, I want to drink more. He was my excuse to keep drinking. So my ex, I was too afraid to leave him because his dad had shot his mom, shot his uncle, and then shot himself. And so my ex would always say, if you left me, that's what's going to happen to you and your family. And so that scared the crap out of me. And he would always threaten that. So I would just stay with him. I know now that I could have left him a long time ago. I still, when I did leave him, it was pretty dang ugly. He stalked me, but, you know, I wish I would have known I could have left him a long time ago. But through this relationship, I'm just going to go through all the events that took place because my drinking got out of control. And just things kept happening, and I never thought I was an alcoholic. I never thought I had a problem. I thought I had bad luck. I either had bad luck or it was his fault every single time. And when I do my fourth step, my first fourth step, it was his fault, right? I could not see my part in a lot of things. So here's a cliff note version of what happened. There was a time when I was sent home from work. I was getting my credentials, and I became a substitute teacher. I had a good relationship with the school district. They always called me back, but at this time my drinking was getting out of control. Like I said, we would go to the bars till, you know, 6 in the morning, but when I would work, I would only go till 2. But I remember showing up late, and they said I smelled like alcohol, so they sent me home. And then I got called in to go speak with the assistant of human resources. And this guy who passed away, he really liked me, and he really knew what was inside of me as an educator, of what I was capable of, and he really worked with me to get my shit together. Excuse my language, sorry. And so he called me in, and he asked me about why I smelled like liquor, and I said that I work in a restaurant, and that somebody spilled a drink on me, and I didn't have time to take a shower, and that's why. That was my excuse. And so he, you know, it was, you know, 2 days when I had had this meeting with him, and so he said, okay, he goes, don't let it happen again, and he sent me off to the school to work that day. I passed out. It occurred, knocked down a no parking sign. I passed out again, and this time when I passed out, I went in between 2 stoplights, and my car stopped right in front of a cement block, the St. Anthony's place, it's a cement church block, and I didn't hit it for some reason. My car just stopped right there. I passed out again in my car. I like to drive, like I said. And my car caught on fire. I had an empty 18-pack in the back of the car. My car was on fire. I was trying to shove all the beer cans under the car, and the neighbor came out and pulled me out of the car. The police came. The ambulance came. The news was there. It was a block away from my house. The cops were there, and for some reason, the ambulance, paramedic told the cop, she's not drinking, she's fine. I was drunk. I mean, I was completely drunk. And I don't know why he told him that. I don't care. My dad came, and my dad said, have you been drinking? I'm like, no, paramedic still asked him. He said I wasn't drinking. And he believed me. Well, I don't know if he believed me, but he said he believed me, and they took me home. I got pulled over in my neighborhood. I was going 100 miles an hour down Herndon trying to get home. And they pulled me over in my neighborhood 2 houses down. I told him I lived right down the street. He said, at this time, I heard pennies you put pennies in your mouth and you blow on the breathalyzer, you won't get a DUI. So I had a mouthful of pennies as I was, as the sirens are behind me, I'm stuffing pennies in my mouth. And by the time they came, I spit them out. I got out of the car. There was at least 8 cop cars because they were following me for so long. And for some reason, he said, walk home. Don't move your car. I waited for them to leave. I got in the car and I moved my car home because I didn't want my parents to even know, like, why are you parked around the block? Got away from that one. I was going home and there was a checkpoint. I thought, I'll just pretend I'm going to a fast food place. So I turned into the parking lot of Arby's, went through the drive-thru. Arby's was closed. Went through the drive-thru anyways. The motorcycle cops behind me. So he pulls me over and I said, I was just hungry. I just wanted Arby's. He goes, it's closed. I didn't know that. And he said, go through the checkpoint. So I went through the checkpoint, told them the same. They asked, why did we go through the parking lot? I said, I wanted Arby's. I was hungry. And at this time, I was bleeding in my arm. My ex had pushed me down in the parking lot. My jeans were ripped. My knee was bleeding. For some reason, the cop let me go. I don't know why. I don't know why they let me go every single time. I am thankful that I never hit and killed somebody to this day. I'm so, so thankful. Then I got pulled over for my first DUI. It was in Easter 2002, I don't remember. But I got pulled over every 4 years. It was 4 years, every 4 years. So the first one was on Easter. I got pulled over at a 1.68. I was really upset because I got pulled over and got taken to the station and my ex got to walk home, and again, it was his fault, right? If he didn't make me come over after I was at my family's and make me drive, I would never be in the car. Even though my sister and myself were drinking all the way from San Jose back to Fresno, and I was already drunk before I even picked him up, but it was his fault. I got my second DUI 4 years later, and at that time, I blew a 2-3-4. Again, guess whose fault it was? It was his fault. This one, kind of might still be his fault because he did push me into the car and told me to drive. Did I have to drive? I don't know. I was scared. I did. My friend saw him hit me. And while we were driving away, so she's the one that called the cops because she was worried for my safety. That was the reason I got that DUI. Plus, I was drunk. When I broke up with my ex, when I finally broke up with him, and he stalked me, I knew he was watching me to do a call and tell me what I was wearing, and I wanted to show him, right? Like, I can do this. I can go drink without you. Like, look at all the guys I'm getting. Look at who I'm hanging out with. And, you know, I would drink. I would drink and try to keep up with the guys. And I would do it until it didn't work anymore because they would stay out late, up late. And I couldn't do it, so I got mixed up in the drugs. And that, I think, is where I really spiraled really fast. I started getting written up for being late at work. I got called in by the administration at my job, and they said that, you know, we're really worried about you. At this time, I had worked at the school for, I don't know, maybe 8 years, and they were really worried about me. And I said, why? Because I'm getting skinny? Are you jealous? I mean, these were my comments. Like, I just remember that. And he's like, no, like, you're not well. And I'm like, no, I'm fine. I go, I'm on a diet. I lost weight. And that was my response. he offered to buy me an alarm clock. I mean, they really wanted to work with me, and I just never saw I had a problem. I couldn't see what everyone was talking about. It didn't make sense to me. I drank, you drink, everyone drinks. I go to your Christmas party, you're drinking. It just didn't make sense to me. Then I got, so this goes on, I spiraled down, and then I got DUI number 3. And so, that one was, I believe, was 2.89. And all I wanted that time, honestly, was Burger King. And my husband will hear this story. Every time we drive by Burger King, I have a resentment against Burger King because that's all I wanted. And I first wanted Jack in the Box, which was a left-hand turn, but I decided Burger King was better, so I swerved in front of the cop to get Burger King. And I got pulled over. Never got my Burger King. So, with that DUI, I had to work the next day, and I remember being so worried about, I'm actually worried about my students, I really was. And how they weren't going to have a teacher because I wasn't able to get them a sub. And the sheriff said, my wife works for the district, she'll get you a sub. I was like, great. That wasn't great because that's how I think my district found out about my third DUI. And it could have been because it was a felony DUI that they found out. I still don't know how they found out, but they found out. And when I did go back to work, they escorted me off campus, and I had to get home, right? Bottom line, I was on leave until the outcome of this case. And so I went into a treatment center. I didn't quit drinking. I went into an outpatient treatment center. And I tried the outpatient. I went to AA meetings. And I didn't believe that I didn't believe you guys were sober. I didn't. I would think that you guys were drinking before you came, and you were doing what I was doing. You were here for the court card. You were here for your family because they told you to quit drinking. And you would drink before you got to the meetings because there's no way you guys could be happy. Like, who's happy when you can't drink? I couldn't fathom it. And so I started drinking before going to the meetings. Before I go to my treatment center, I would go get a Coke and put some Malibu or some vodka or, you know, something in it and drink it on the way to the treatment center. Apparently they caught on, and the third time I did it, they decided they wanted to test me when I came in, and the counselor said, you have a problem. If you can't come to treatment without drinking, you need to go to an inpatient. And so I did. When I went to the inpatient, I was actually excited about going to the inpatient because I needed a break from everything. I wanted a break. Like, it was like a vacation for me. Like, I just to get away. And, you know, there were 6 people. All of them have passed away from this disease except for 2 that I know of. Because they couldn't stay sober. And when I went to the treatment center, I told them they were letting me out on July 3rd. And I said, don't let me out on July 3rd because July 4th, I'm going to drink. And they said, well, we have to because of the whole 28-day rule. I don't know what the reasoning was, but they had to let me out, and I drank on July 4th. And that's what I did. I drank. I would get sober, because I would get caught from my mom or somebody, my brother, and then I would drink again. So I have a couple sobriety dates. The last time I drank, I go to court, and I have to do a year program to get my felony off. And if I get my felony off, after I do the year program, I can get my job back. So I'm still on leave. My job's hanging over me. My credential is now suspended, and I'm going to have to go see the credentialing board. So this is all hanging over me, but I'm still drinking. Because I don't think I have a problem. So I'm drinking and I'm taking, do you know the I don't know if they're called now. I knew what they were called, but the urine cleaning test. I would do those before I would go get tested, and it didn't work. And when I went to see the probation person, she says, you are going to have a hard time with the judge. He's going to lock you up. And I was like, why? And she said, because you didn't pass your drug test. And I go, well, then they mixed it up because I haven't done anything. And so I went to Judge Bramer, and Judge Bramer, his daughter was killed by a drunk driver, and he had no nonsense for this. Like, he was by the book, and, you know, I thank him for this. He's since passed. He is the reason I am sober today. I truly believe it. He threw me in jail for the night. His white girl did not do jail, and I was scared to go to jail, and it was funny because I went to jail, and I remember waiting to go up, and I was crying, and the girl goes, don't cry. I'm like, oh, I can't do this, and so she goes, stop crying before you get up there. So I did, and I get up there, and this hardcore lady comes up to me, and I've never been so happy to see her in my entire life. She was a student's parent, and she says, you taught my son, he loved you, I got your back. And oh my God, I was so happy to see her. And she was known as Mama Bulldog in Fresno. Everyone knew her. She was tough. Everyone was scared of her, and no one gave her son a chance at school, but I did. And she remembered that. And she took me under her wing that night, and God was there once again. Mm-hmm. See, God's been there. I just haven't seen it this whole time. He was there when I almost hit that cement wall. He was there when I went to jail. He was there, you know, when my car caught on fire. He's been there. I just never saw it. So I get out of jail, and my brother picks me up. I want my friend to pick me up because I asked him one last. I'm ready to get sober now, right? I'm ready. Just one more drink because I have to shake. Like, just one more drink. And my friend called my brother. My brother came. At this time, my brother has already went to all the bars in Fresno, all the ones he knows I've been to, and told the bartender. So she shows up, call me, and he gave me his number. So he picks me up, and I don't know what he said. I do know he said he cleaned out my room, and there were two bags of cans, bottles, everything that he could find. It's gone. He says it's gone, and it's not coming back in this house. And I don't know what he said, but I never took another drink, and that was on December 11th, 2009. So, I know that I was self-destructive to myself. For some reason, I didn't want to live. There was time during all of that when I knew I had to quit drinking that I tried to kill myself. And I know if you try to kill yourself, you can. So I probably didn't really want to, but I did try, like, sleeping pills, like a whole bottle. I don't know if that really worked. I thought I did. I had a good night's sleep, though. I didn't want to live. You know, I just couldn't fathom never drinking again, never picking up a drink. I didn't understand how anybody can do that. And that was where I was stuck in this program. So you're saying I can never have a drink again. And so somebody said, no, you can never have a drink today. Take it day by day. And that's what I had to do. Okay, today I cannot have a drink. And then tomorrow I cannot have a drink. Um, when I came to this program, my first time I wrote about, you know, people I was resentful for, God was one of them. And I think about the one. God was one of them. And I wrote God. This is my first journal. And I put, why was I put in an abusive relationship? I didn't understand it. See, I grew up Catholic, and I went to Catholic school, and I went to church every Sunday. And I didn't understand why he didn't protect me. Why did he put me in this position? Why was I not helped, you know, when I'm getting beat? Why are you not helping me? Why am I an alcoholic? Why did you choose me to be an alcoholic? Like, why not my sister? And I did. I really thought she was the bad one. Why not her? Why me? And haven't I been through enough? Now you're going to put do this to me. And it was, I never saw, I was the victim, see? I never saw my part. So I got a sponsor, and I started working with Seth. The first thing I had to admit, I was powerless over alcohol. I didn't understand nor want to believe this. There was three things that I had to do. I had to trust in God, and that was hard because I didn't believe. He did not protect me all those years, so I thought, and it was hard for me to put my trust in God. I had to clean house, and I had to work with others. Those were the three things I was told to do. I had to surrender. I had to be honest and have the willingness and open-mindedness to do this program. When I got to step three, you know, I had to turn my life over to God. How do you do that? How do you turn your life over to God when you feel He wasn't there? But I knew something was there because I saw it working with all of you. See, when I came back the last time, I knew you guys weren't drinking. I knew it was real. And I knew it was working, and I knew there was something out there that helped you get through this. I have to ask God to remove, I had to do step four. Didn't want to do step four, and when I did step four, I didn't think I had any part in any of it. And it really took a long time to see my part in what I had, even with my ex. I had a part in them. I had a huge part in it. I didn't see it. It took a lot to get that out of me. Asking God to remove the defect, character defect, I still have. I don't think I'll ever get rid of some character defects. I don't. I mean, I ask all the time, but I don't know. I have a hard time with that. I had to make amends. I have 13 years, and were you betting on how long does it take for me to cry? 13 years, and there's a couple of men I haven't made. One's my brother. Not that I haven't wanted to. I was planning on making an amends, and then we moved up here. But he deserves it. And until I do that, I'm not going to have this freedom that's in me. Why I'm crying. I don't have that freedom because I have not made an amends to him. And he deserves it. I made a financial amends, man. You know, he paid for a lot of the things. We bought a house together, and I pretty much screwed him because I was fighting with court stuff. I lost my job. He was paying for my car. He was paying for the house. He was paying for everything on something he could barely get by. And I put him through hell. I have to continue to take personal inventory every day. I have to ask myself, was I resentful? Was I selfish? Am I dishonest? Am I afraid? Do I owe an apology? Was I kind and loving towards others? Was I thinking of me? What could I have done better? Every day I think about that. Every day, I never thought I was dishonest. And I had this conversation with my sponsor, and I remember this because I have it written in another journal. And my sponsor told me to look up some things. Look up lie of omission, which is something that is omitted or neglected. So if I admit that, you know, I lie through omission, I just don't tell you about it, right? I'm lying. I'm being dishonest. lie of commission, directly lying to somebody, and self-delusion, excessive gratification of one's desires. Lying to myself. That's me, right there. Self-delusion. I lie to myself all the time, right? I deserve to not work tomorrow because I work late hours, right? I have a choice to go in tomorrow, but maybe I shouldn't because I work late hours, right? That's a lie of self-delusion. Or I don't have an alcohol. I'm not an alcoholic. I'm lying to myself. So today I work the program. I don't work the best program. I'm not going to sit up here and tell you that I'm in the book and I work with people and I go to 10 meetings a week. I don't. And this is where I need to work to get better. I use the excuse, right, that I'm busy. I have a hard job. I work late hours. I do. I do work late hours. I do have a hard job. But I had worked late hours before and had a hard job before, and I still made time to go to the bars every night, to drink till 2, 3 in the morning, and do it all over every single day. And if I could do that, then I should be able to go to a meeting, which is what is saving my life, what has given me everything I have today. See, if I don't go to those meetings, if I don't start working with people, if I remove myself from this program, all of those thoughts of drinking comes back. I have to learn to slow down in life. So I have this book. It is the 12-step prayer book. It's a really good book. And you go to the front of the book and you pick the date and it sends you to a page. So I really like it. I read it every morning. But I read the prayer that it tells me to read, but I also read this because I need this. This is one that I read, and then now I just read it every morning. And it says, just for today. Just for today, I will try to live through this day only and not tackle my whole life problems at once. I could do something for 12 hours that would appall me if I felt I had to do it and keep doing it for a lifetime. Just for today, I will be happy. This assumes to be true what Abraham Lincoln says, that most folks are happy as they make their minds to be. Just for today, I will try to strengthen my mind. I will study. I will learn something useful. I will not be a mental loafer. I will read something that requires effort, thought, concentration. Just for today, I will exercise my soul in 3 ways. I will do somebody a good turn and not get down. If anybody knows of it, I will not count. I will do at least 2 things I don't want to, just for exercise. I will not show anyone that my feelings are hurt. They may be hurt, but today I will not show it. And it goes on. But I read that every day. That one prayer. Every day. Let's see. My husband, I'm not going to talk about. I can't do this. I cannot do life without him. You know, we laugh, we argue, we pray, we joke, and we like to eat a lot. We are the perfect package. The one thing we will never do is go to bed angry. And that's from this program. Right? Because we sit there, we both reflect on our day, and we both will make an amends when we need to. And I think that's why we're so strong today, is because he works a way better program than me. But we do not go to bed when we're angry. And we call, even though he doesn't get into my program and I don't get into his program, he will remind me when I'm grouchy and my character defects are flaring that maybe it's time to go to a meeting in a nice way. Like, hey, why don't you check out that meeting tonight? There's that 7 o'clock meeting you haven't been to in a while. Then I know, you know, I better get to a meeting. I can't go to events that people are drinking at without Al. I have to let people know that I'm an alcoholic. I have to. Because it's going to be that one time that I'm having that bad day that someone's going to say, have a drink. And I'm going to say, okay. My job, I'm a principal. And I tell my employees I'm an alcoholic. They know I don't drink. And I do that for many reasons, several reasons. One is that they hold me accountable. I don't want them putting bottles of wine on my desk. I don't want them asking me to go drink or ask me to go drink or ask me to go to a party, but I know to take him. Also, I do it because I know there's others out there that don't know what to do. I help parents. I'm not afraid to tell parents. You know, I have the title principal, but I am just a human being. I am just an alcoholic just like everybody else. Doesn't matter what position you are in life. She used to work for me in Fresno, and she reached out to me in July and said, do you remember when you told me you didn't drink? I have some questions. That's why I do that. That's why I tell people I'm an alcoholic, because I want to help anybody who doesn't know what to do. And I'm so glad you're here. Not to put you on the spot, sorry. If I'm going to remove myself from this program, there are times when I can actually taste alcohol. I know what it tastes like. Like, I can... It's that phenomenal, like, I can taste it. I, God, I know what a glass of wine tastes like, and it would really sound good right now. Or I know what that shot of tequila tastes like. Man, it really sounds good right now. I need to get my butt to a meeting, because I don't know where that's going to take me. I need to be honest with my sponsor, because I don't know where it's going to take me. And like I said, I know I have another drink with me, but I don't think I have another recovery, right? I don't know if I'm going to make it back here. I don't. It was really hard for me to get it the first time, that I don't want to chance it, that I will lose everything that I have today, because I have the most amazing life because of this program. This program has given me more than I've learned. I've learned more about myself. I've learned more about myself this last year than I ever have. We moved from Fresno, and so when we came here, we moved here 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago. And I had just gotten the group of girls that I, you know, did book studies with that I finally trusted. I have a hard time trusting women. I said that. I finally got a group, and then we moved. And so it was really hard coming here. And I'm finally getting a couple girls here that I trust. And it's been 2 years. But we're doing a book study, and we're doing this book, Mastery of Love. Amazing book. It's how I know that it works on how you can love yourself, right? Because, you know, you go through life judging yourself because of what society already has said society is, right? Your family has said you must live like this, because it's been done this way all the, you know, all your years. And that's me. And I need to learn how to love myself. I need to come out and know who am I, right? Not who my parents tell me I am. Not what society tells me I am, but who am I as a person? And that's what I'm really trying to figure out. I'm going to end with this. These are not AA books, sorry, but this is another book I read. It's called In the Season. And so you just take a page out from the season you're in. And this one I want to read is on gratitude. Sorry, I read it the last time I spoke. I'm going to read it again. But this is how I feel about this stroke, about just where I am today. Gratitude. In the height of joy, at the peaks of elation, there is gratitude. When there is an extra garlic sauce thrown into a bag of freshly baked pita bread, there is gratitude. When the dog rambunctiously shakes his tail and twirls in dizzy circles upon your arrival at home, there is gratitude. When a friend leaves a post-it note to say that they are thankful for you, there is gratitude. Through the mundaneness of life, We express gratitude for the stability, for the quiet, predictable ebb and flow of events. There is gratitude in that we woke to a new day, a quiet glistening through the windows, a gentle good morning. There is gratitude in the simple moments of the day. In the challenging times and moments when chaos consumes our thoughts, preventing us from practicing gratitude, from reminiscing the small glimpse of good and giving thanks in the moment, when our spirits are downrotted, beaten, exhausted from being, in the moments when we struggle for peace, quiet, for stillness, these moments of pain and confusion, when the cavern seems so deep and dark and perilous, may there be a quickening in our spirits to remember that there is hope, there is purpose, there will be a better day, there will be a restoration, there will be another moment for gratitude. Rehearse and remember the stories of the moments of gratitude, of laughter, of levity. Take a moment to utter a breath of thank you. Through gritted teeth or shouts of joy, thank you, I am grateful. Say it until a thought or memorable bubbles back to the surface of something that made your heart warm, happy, proud, and safe. What is one thing that brought joy, big or small, today? Who am I thankful for today? Where is that place I'd like to go that makes me smile? What is your favorite flavor of ice cream? Friends, I wish you well and hope your day will have at least one moment of goodness for which you are grateful. Thank you. I'm Andrea Malcolm.
That was so good. Another hand for Andrea.